Hello everyone, this is Dr. Lewis Blevins of Pituitary World News. I'm delighted to have the opportunity this morning to read to you an excerpt from one of our books published through Pituitary World News on pituitary disease that's written for doctors, patients, other healthcare providers, family members, etc. I'm going to start with the introductory chapter on the book that is at the publisher now on hypopituitarism. Hypopituitarism, an introduction. I define hypopituitarism as the partial or complete deficiency of one or more anterior pituitary hormones. Panhypopituitarism is, of course, deficiency of all of the anterior pituitary hormones. I like to include diabetes insipidus as a separate disorder if it also exists. By partial or complete deficiency, I mean that a particular hormone may be deficient in a mild, moderate, or severe and often complete degree. One or more pituitary hormones may be affected. The deficiencies may all be partial, all complete, or a combination of some partial deficiencies and other complete deficiencies. For example, a man with a non-secreting pituitary tumor may have complete growth hormone deficiency, partial testosterone deficiency, and normal pituitary, thyroid, and adrenal function. There appears to be a hierarchy of loss of pituitary functions in the setting of pituitary diseases. This is partially related to the dispersion of the different hormone-secreting pituitary cells located within the gland itself, and the teleologic significance of certain hormones. In general, growth hormone is lost first, followed by the gonadotropins, FSH and LH, and prolactin, then TSH, followed by ACTH. Growth and reproduction cost a significant amount of energy. Thus, it makes sense that one would lose these hormones first if one were to become ill. On the other hand, thyroid and adrenal functions are essential for life, and it makes sense that these would be preserved even in the face of significant illnesses or extensive pituitary disease. While this pattern of loss is seen commonly, there are exceptions. For example, some patients seem to be missing only TSH and others only ACTH. However, the exceptions to the rule are indeed rare. Interestingly, some glands in the body can produce some hormones regardless of whether the pituitary is in control. Thus, some patients with pituitary disease may have more mild manifestations of a particular disorder than would be patients with the relevant target gland problem. For example, a patient who has had her thyroid gland surgically removed and is not treated with thyroid hormone would have a severe deficiency of thyroxin. On the other hand, a patient with hypopituitarism may produce enough thyroxin, even in the absence of TSH, so that the free T4 is either only slightly low or perhaps low normal. I will say, however, that the adrenal glands do not seem to be able to produce much cortisol unless revved up by exogenous ACTH when there is a complete deficiency of ACTH. This observation reminds me to say that pituitary hormones are trophic, or growth-promoting hormones for target glands. For example, patients with chronic ACTH deficiency leading to adrenal insufficiency can be stimulated to produce cortisol by administering ACTH to prime the adrenal glands. Also, patients with hypogonadism due to pituitary deficiency can be stimulated to make gonadal sex steroids by the administration of HCG and FSH. In essence, the target glands can be awakened in the setting of hypopituitarism by administration of pituitary hormones. We used to define pituitary dysfunction as causing secondary target gland deficiencies and hypothalamic dysfunction as causing tertiary target gland hormone deficiencies. Mostly, we refer to pituitary and hypothalamic deficiencies as causing central target gland deficiencies. For example, I might use the term central hypothyroidism rather than secondary or tertiary hypothyroidism. The clinical translation of all this is that patients with pituitary disorders may present with mild, moderate, or severe deficiency of the hormones of the pituitary and target glands. Unfortunately, however, most of the symptoms and signs are nonspecific, and there is considerable overlap in symptoms ascribed to the different deficiency states. Furthermore, not all patients have all the symptoms of a particular hormone deficiency, and some patients may only have some of the less common manifestations. Symptoms and signs of growth hormone deficiency include fatigue, decreased energy, exercise intolerance, brain fog, abnormal cognitive functions, loss of muscle mass, gain in fat mass, weight gain, sexual dysfunction, social isolation, decreased bone density, hypercholesterolemia, and increased cardiovascular risk. Of course, children with growth hormone deficiency may have short stature. They are often overweight. Prolactin deficiency is often associated with inability to breastfeed an infant. There is some evidence that prolactin deficiency might also lead to a luteal phase defect and consequent infertility. In men, sex hormone deficiency might lead to weakness, decreased strength, gain in fat mass, easy fatigability, loss of muscle mass, depression, emotional lability, hot flashes, hot flushes, diminished or loss of libido, erectile dysfunction, including impotence, impaired ability to ejaculate, and infertility. In women, sex hormone deficiency might lead to abnormal menses, diminished size of their breasts, vaginal dryness, dyspareunia, which is painful intercourse, increased risk of urinary tract infections, depression, hot flashes and flushes, emotional lability, diminished libido, anorgasmia, and infertility. Symptoms and signs of central hypogonadism might include weakness, fatigue, decreased energy, increased need for sleep, cold intolerance, and weight gain. Myxedema, dry skin, slowing of the heart rate, hoarseness, and other textbook manifestations of hypothyroidism are all more common in patients with primary hypothyroidism than they are in central hypothyroidism. Symptoms of cortisol deficiency include weakness, fatigue, loss of appetite, weight loss, lack of motivation and drive, difficulty recovering from minor illnesses and accidents, hypoglycemia, hyponatremia, and a slightly low blood pressure. Multiple pituitary hormone deficiencies can lead to nonspecific anemia. Also, the combination of adrenal insufficiency and gonadal deficiency can lead to a loss of secondary sexual hair, such as the hair in the underarms and over the pubic area. Some patients with hypopituitarism are said to have fine wrinkling of the skin about the face. I personally believe this is largely attributed to chronic growth hormone deficiency. Some patients with hypopituitarism appear chronically ill. Others look more younger than their stated age. Remember, hypopituitarism is a partial or a complete deficiency of one or more anterior pituitary hormones. Symptoms and signs overlap, vary from patient to patient, and may be mild, moderate, or severe. I used to believe that hypopituitarism was permanent. It is not. I have seen improvements in pituitary function in some patients as late as 5 to 7 years after pituitary surgery. Some diseases, such as lymphocytic hypophysitis, do not always fully destroy the pituitary, and recovery is possible in a small proportion of patients. I'm not sure why the function improves. I am most careful in assessing pituitary function before I commit a patient to replacement therapy. Yet, some of these patients can discontinue treatment years later. I suspect pituitary stem cells are at work. I'm not so sure that exogenous stem cells would do the job, but endogenous stem cells know what they're doing well. If this is the case, it is a cause for celebration.